Hody. How you doing, Hody?
Doing really well. Sorry to drop. I realized I wasn't restreaming to all my other platforms, and that would have been a very disappointing thing, because we've got a good one here.
Yes, we do. And this, for everyone, welcome once again to Free For All, your Thursday night spot for libertarian talk. Thank you for joining us once again right here on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. Catch us on X, Rumble, Facebook, and YouTube, of course. And also, you could catch us on Hody's streams on X. You could catch this on my streams, Big John at underscore SXM, as you can see on the screen there. So basically, you could stumble across us in a couple of places. Thank you for joining us again once again tonight. And you could have – it has a feeling of one of those types of shows, Hody, because as soon as I hit go live, you dropped out. My mouse froze up. It was like, oh, my goodness, what's happening? But we got back just a few seconds too late, so I don't think it's going to happen. Everyone, say hello to Hody. Oatster, how you doing tonight?
Oh, man, really good. I had a great birthday on Tuesday. I am 41, and I celebrated by winning a nice little game show in the Libertarian Talk space, and I was excited. I was against two people whose platforms are much larger than mine own. And so it's nice when you can be the underdog pulling off the victory. It helped that game show happened on my birthday. And I made that. If you want to give me a birthday present, chime in and help me win. And thankfully, everybody responded really well to that. So well, I might not be bigger, but I am more loved.
Yeah, I'll say one thing. You know, I have to admit, I really hadn't caught too many episodes. And let's give it a plug for Smarter Than a Politician. Hosted by, what's the gentleman's name? Is it Free? Is that how you refer to
him? Yeah, he goes by Free. Yep.
There you go. Not a bad name for a libertarian, of course.
Pretty good.
But join and watch the show. I have to admit, Hody, it was fun. I had caught the previous one with Larry Sharp, I think, because Larry kind of tuned me into it. And I said, all right, I'll check that out. And then I checked you out on it last night, two nights ago, right? Tuesday? Yep. And you did really well, and happy birthday, of course. I always like to be reminded that my co-host is a full generation younger than me, because it gives us a span of everything, I think. So I think we're doing pretty well here. All right, Hody. All well and good. I'm glad you had a good birthday, and you ended up winning the show. Bring home the trophy for Grumblings Media, because God knows I could never do it. All right. here we are, folks. All right. Two important topics to talk about tonight, just to give you a little bit of a tease. Here's an existential question, Hody. Is throwing a tuna melt at someone worth 8 years in prison? I want people to think about that before we continue. Have that ruminate in the back of your heads, everyone, because we'll be talking about that. And secondly, the second question, rather, I would have people consider as we head into it, will be our second topic, and it's related to the following. Can any man in history actually stop six wars in 6 months? That's an interesting, counterfactual, I guess, to try to figure out. And I think with those two little hooks, we can start the show. So, Hody, the first thing I want to talk about is the federalization of D.C. This happened last week. We didn't get time to get to it because we had a lot of juicy stuff. When we had Jake Porter on the show last week. But this is still an issue, still of interest, not just to libertarians, but I think to anybody interested in federal overreach and trying to cut down on that. So let's start out with the facts, Hody, and then jump in any time. Washington, D.C., of course, is not a state. And it's something it's an area that is under the control of the federal government. That's the first thing to set aside. So Washington, D.C. is not like New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, any city within a sovereign state in the United States, but rather it is, in essence, the property of the federal government. Now, since 1973, it's been under something called home rule, where the municipality of Washington, D.C. basically ran its own affairs. They have the MPD, the Metropolitan Police Force, the police department, rather. They don't have any voting congressman in the House of Representatives, but I think they do have a representative, I believe, but they're non-voting, right? So that was up until 1973. or rather I should say, in 1973 is when the Home Rule Act was signed by President Richard Nixon, and it granted D.C. residents the ability to elect local officials, and Congress retained oversight. But apparently, Washington, D.C. is the epicenter of everything that is bad and wrong and horrible in the eyes of President Donald Trump. And therefore, using the excuse of someone called Big Balls, the famous Big Balls of Doge reputation, actually the young man was attempting to prevent a carjacking. In the process, he got beat up pretty bad. And, you know, there's nothing quite like when MAGA gets attacked directly, because I think it was within a couple of days the Trump administration announced that they were taking – they were federalizing D.C., putting out ICE, the National Guard, the Army. Kristi Noem personally would be up there with her fake rifle and spray cans of hairspray, whatever she does when she's out on these raids. And everybody – and their mother is patrolling Washington, D.C. now, that works for the federal government. Hoedster, let's start out. Let's get some thoughts on this from you.
I guess my first thoughts, I do want to say, guys, don't beat people up. I don't care who they are. Don't throw a sandwich at somebody. Don't. Peaceful revolution is overwhelmingly more successful than nonviolent revolution. And if you would like to Google this, there's something called the 3.5% rule. If 3.5% of a population is engaged in nonviolent action against something, and they are engaged in it, they have like a 100% success rate. So nonviolence and then 3.5%. So, you know, you get 3.5% of people to mobilize, you get people a nonviolent action, you go towards that. There is it's either 99 or 100%. People quibble on some of the details, but essentially, right, like you can essentially go undefeated. That said, there does come a point when we talk about libertarianism where it's like, at what point is violence justified against? And it's not violence to defend yourself or your neighbor. And so ICE, if they are trying to deport somebody and you huck a sandwich at them, well, they're initiating the aggression. You are responding to the aggression. So as far as from a legal rights perspective and political philosophy perspective, legally I know it's illegal. Political philosophy, I think you have every right to defend yourself and defend your neighbor. Right. Big Balls, kind of the same way. If you see him as an aggressor, I wouldn't try to steal his car, but, you know, there's right. that. But, yeah, I think – and so I do want to kind of – I want to cool off with that before I present any of my hotter takes on the DC issue, because I actually have, like, a super spicy take. But for nice. Now, I do want to say that, like, that is kind of my ground level, that we do want to behave ourselves. I can't control everybody else's bad behavior. I can't control Trump's bad behavior. Right. But me being somebody who is against Trump, I do want to tell people who listen to me or who value what I have to say, I think there's a better way that we can go about this. Listen, a Subway sandwich, that bread is hard as rocks. That thing's like sawdust if you try to bite into it, scraping the roof of your mouth. That's not necessarily the most gentle thing to get hucked at you. You know, if it was a Quiznos sandwich or, you know, a Jimmy John's sandwich, maybe you should have got a lighter sentence.
Or but, something, you know. Something on Wonder Bread, perhaps, that would have been a little bit better, peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Yeah, but, you know, it is funny. And I want to get to that. Like sort of as a tail end, because I do think it's a little comedic, in a sad way. But I want to get your thoughts a little bit. Let's turn it back a little bit, right? So, of course, the big thing of the Trump administration is let's take a couple of incidents, pretend that they're much more frequent than they are, and use that as justification for a policy that may or may not be overtly authoritarian, right? So we kind of see it with the immigration, right? It's like, hey, every immigrant that we target is a mass murderer or a child molester or a pedo or something like that, right? It's never just the admission that we're throwing out a lot of people that are just trying to live a life here. They're trying to make a better life for themselves. And we'll fall back on the inane argument that being here illegally is a crime itself, right? So you get that sort of argument from MAGA a lot, and it applies to a lot of different things. So the excuse in the case of Washington, D.C., yes, I think that Big Balls' injuries, and again, I kind of say Big Balls, first of all, because right now, Hody, I don't know if you have it in front of you, because I've got pages of notes in front of me, and even with my glasses, I forget the gentleman's name. I forget what Big Balls' real name is, because I kind of feel silly referring to him as Big Balls all the time. What was it, like Constantine, I think, something or other? But anyway, as soon as you get that, you'll let me know.
Edward Korestein.
Edward Korestein, thank you. So Edward Korestein is trying to prevent a crime, is trying to prevent an assault. I don't want to take away his noble act, right? I'm not downplaying that in any way. But this was the sort of like what lit the fuse, right? So it's okay. Look, Big Balls got attacked. We could spin this, right? The liberals are attacking the brave Doge guy who tried to save us money and all that. So that was then used, and then you had the justifications. Hey, DC is horribly overrun by crime. You can't walk down the street without getting mugged or killed or raped or whatever, right? And you see all these crazy statistics coming out. And of course, being a data scientist myself, there are, you know, statistics. The same statistic can be used to prove 100 different points, most of them contradicting each other, if not all of them, right? But here's the thing. Washington, D.C. does have a high crime rate, without a doubt, especially when it comes to violent crimes. They have, I believe, per capita, the highest by far in the United States, more so than Chicago or New York or L.A. or any of the typical urban centers that you might associate with violent crime. Here's something else, though. While it is true that they have, in terms of absolute numbers and per capita numbers, not absolute numbers, but per capita numbers, they have the highest crime rates, especially violent crime. That crime rate has been declining, and it's been declining at a pace much higher than the rest of the country. So you have this sort of like, to be fair, Hody, you do have this split picture, right? You have this picture of, yeah, look, crime is still pretty bad in Washington, D.C. Like, I would say it's sort of like, say, 1970s New York, to use my sort of reference, right? Growing up in the city in the 70s was rough, you know, and that's kind of what I approximate Washington, D.C. to be. Like, you tried not to go out at night. There were certain areas you avoided unless you traveled in groups, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, whatever we were doing under home rule, apparently, crime had decreased by double-digit percentages. Violent crime especially was down. And what you get when you, of course, is the cherry-picking of data, right? Like, the Trump administration picks one category that happened lately, like, say, jaywalking or whatever, and it's like, oh, that's proof. And then you have the folks who are against the federalization saying, hey, man, we were doing better. We're not there yet, but we were improving. Hody, is the actual crime situation in Washington, D.C., first of all, let me get your opinion. How do you rate, how do you categorize, how do you contextualize the crime situation in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, bad, obviously bad. It is not one of our better cities. It's been doing a little better. The last time we gathered full data for this, it's something they do every 2 years, and I believe we're actually due for it pretty soon here to be released by the states. But what we're looking at is it's probably about the third worst as far as fourth worst for homicides, and about in line with the rest as far as like civil stuff. So right. Hey. Fourth worst is still bad, right? Like still right. A problem. And perhaps even worse because this is a federal district and not something else. This actually is the job of Congress to take care of. And if Congress fails to enact anything, it is the job of the executive branch, the president. So Trump does overstep his bounds a lot. This is not one instance in which he is doing it. Somebody does need to do better at this. I'm a libertarian. So I absolutely believe that we need to violent crime, you know, obviously all those civil crimes I could care less about. But violent crime, that absolutely does need to be something that we crack down on. My nuclear spicy take is somewhat related to the data, but we'll go over that in a second.
Sure. So, like, I don't think, as much as I'd like to dunk on Trump, the truth of the matter is it's not like when he sent troops into L.A.
Yes.
This is within his mandate as president to send in the troops. The question is, and I think a lot of us, especially us civil libertarians in general, some of the questions we have is this a trial balloon? Trump is famous for sending out trial balloons. He'll say what seemingly is ridiculous to see how people will react. And it's part of his makeup as a populist, right? Like, he'll say stupid things like, I'm going to put 150% tariff on everyone. Then he waits 3 days and he's like, how are the people acting to this? Is my base okay with it? Do they want more? Do they want less? It comes with having no principles of your own, right? It comes with adapting the principles of the majority around you. So when he says, I federalized D.C., we got to get crime in line and under control and all that, fair enough. Let's say I give him the best of intentions and I say that was his goal. But is the way he's going about it, Hody, do you think that is a positive way of doing things or a negative way of doing things? The militarization of policing in this country has always gone against the American ethos, right? We don't want the army policing the streets. We don't want the Marines, you know, living on the subway to hunt down criminals, right? So what do you gather from the approach of what the federalization has brought?
So Trump is absolutely using this as an escalation, right? He's saying, hey, I'll start here, and then he's already thrown out the names of cities that he'd like to invade.
Right.
You know, he's predominantly in California going after his buddy Gavin Newsom there and wants to be like, yeah, maybe starts in D.C. and then I'll go over here. Those are outside of his jurisdiction. So what we have to remember is that while I can say Trump might be correctly, and even I don't want him using the power, he is applying his power. He does have that power to apply here. He's already talking about how he can overextend himself and violate his power by doing this. The other issue, and I guess it's with the premise of the question, and this is my spicy take that I've teased, he's not actually doing anything. This is all for show. So I want to talk about the statistics. This is something you can look up, the DC crime rates. Now, while we don't have like FBI release data, they actually do have release data for both 2024 and currently in 2025, as recent as August 21st. That's today. They've got the updates. So we can actually see what they are doing as far as like how many people do they arrest. So Pam Bondi got up just yesterday, said that they'd arrested 550 people in this week. Well, how many people do they arrest in an average week? 660. They're arresting fewer people now since this is happening. I'm looking at this data here, and I'm like, okay, so you've arrested less people with the National Guard rather than more. Now, something that has increased as I got bigger into the data, because they separate out violent crimes and nonviolent crimes, is they are now disproportionately punishing nonviolent crimes a little bit higher. Guns without licenses. Average amount of busted per week is 55, according to this data, and it's up to 86 if we include the 8-day span that they gave us today. So obviously that's a little bit higher. They're going more after people that are, as you said, jaywalking, people that have a firearm but didn't kill anybody, didn't use it, people who failed to appear in court, right? Something like that. And so they are increasing that. And that's coming at the expense of violent crimes. Their arrests for property thefts are down. Their arrests for homicides are down. Now, they're bragging a lot. You'll see like a picture like, we busted this guy who had murdered somebody and tried to skip out on bail. That's all true. Make sure to look those up. And you'll see that they've actually been coordinating with authorities on this for sometimes since the Biden administration for some of these big busts. So this is Trump taking credit where it's not earned. And the only credit that actually is earned is that he's taking focus off of violent crime and he's focusing on nonviolent crime now. It looks like a huge focus of his is drug possession and firearm possession. And those, right. And that's where we see the actual bump. But he's actually arrested fewer people because we're busting fewer violent criminals.
Yeah, and that's sort of like the sort of dichotomy of this, right? Because – or the, I should say the paradox of this. Because you're right. Every arrest – like I saw Patel today. Your FBI has coordinated and done 600 arrests or whatever. You know, anything to keep your memory off the fact that where are the Epstein files, right? Like that's still, you know, we're still distracting from that.
Right.
We're distracting from the fact that inflation is starting to go through the roof, right? We're distracting from all that because there's things for you to be afraid of, right? Let's terrify you with stuff. Now, this sort of reminds
Wait,
me.
Wait, did you say let's terrify you with stuff? That's pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty good. I give you credit for being quick on that one. But here's the thing. And by the way, those that are watching, please feel free to comment on what you thought of Hody's little pun there. I'm sure folks may have an opinion on it. But anyway, I was going to say, being old enough to remember this sort of thing, this is kind of the playbook that Rudy Giuliani had when he became mayor of New York initially, right? He was coming in after the Dinkins administration where crime had skyrocketed in New York. And one of the things he did was, among others, was – he turned up enforcement action against what he called quality of life crimes, right? So that would be the turnstile jumpers in the subway, smoking weed in the street, cracking down in Times Square famously, getting rid of the smut shops that were, you know, he zoned them out of existence and things like that. But the thing was, he didn't just do that for the sake of doing it. If any sort of method to that sort of crackdown, it was that he had some data that said if you harass and arrest the turnstile jumpers, more often than not, you're grabbing guys who jumped bail. You find out there's a warrant out for their arrest for serious crimes. Bench warrants were issued and things like that. And that's where he became successful policing New York. It wasn't just that we're doing it so we could get in the newspapers and say, hey, we arrested like 600 people this week. You know, it wasn't to keep score like that, if I could give the old Giuliani credit, as opposed to the farce he's become now, right? There was a method to that policing. It was like, you know, if someone's a habitual quality of life criminal, there's a high correlation to them being a serious criminal, right? So they were trying to correlate that. And for the most part, it was a success in New York. To be honest, right? But this doesn't seem to be that case, right? This seems to be, highlight the legit busts, to your point. B, make sure that what you do bust people for, we get to put on X and we have all our right-wing trolls, like, amplify the nonsense and let the rest of the nation believe that we are taking, you know, the equivalent of the South Bronx in the 70s and turning it into a paradise again. And to your point, I think that's the layer that's the most important, because if he can convince the rest of the country that I essentially took an unsalvageable city, a city ridden with so much crime that no one cared to live there anymore, and made it habitable again, it'll be more willing that when he sends the troops into Chicago or New York or LA, which, by the way, this is not libertarian cynicism. This is not libertarian doomsaying. This is coming from the president and his supporters. What is it? His Goebbels. What's his name? Stephen Miller. That guy will get on TV the whole time. And by the way, as an aside, folks, take a picture of Stephen Miller talking and then take a picture of Goebbels from the late 30s and put them side by side. Other than being follically challenged on the part of Miller, there's a striking resemblance there, folks. Put them side by side. Do yourself a favor. You'll be shocked at how much those two resemble each other. But anyway, so Hody, what I'm going to do right now is play the scene with that's got everyone talking. That's the sandwich scene. So let's put that
Careful.
Up.
Graphic content coming out. Graphic
content.
Warning.
So this guy is Sean Dunn, the person in the pink, right? So look at this. What is it, like five guys chase him down? Six guys chase him down? That is the stiffest white man running away from the cops I've ever seen in my life. Look at that. Oh, God, look at that. Just look at this. Assault with a deadly weapon. Look at that. Look at that. Running away.
Ah, geez.
You know, Hody, as I watched, the only thing that would make... Jeez, okay. What's the only thing missing from this? It's that if only you could have that Benny Hill music, the Yakety Sax playing in the background. You know, that's the only thing missing from this nonsense, you know. Honestly, that you just witnessed was they initially charged him, but not on a federal charge. Basically, they went before the judge. The judge said, yeah, get out of my courtroom. Why are you even here, right? Then you had Judge Jeanine. What's her name? The one that used to be on TV. That's now the U.S. Attorney General for Washington, D.C.
Piro?
He gets out and says, we're not going to put up with this. This is assault. This is a vicious assault on a police officer doing his duty. So we're gonna do this. We're going to charge this guy with a federal charge of assaulting a police officer. It's a felony charge that carries an 8-year sentence. And in order to get this deadly criminal who hurled a tuna melt at a police officer in Washington, D.C., this was the scene, folks. Oh, let me just put that up there. This was the scene, Hody. Look at this. This is, look at this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 20 guys, it was said. By the way, this is the White House account showing this. 20 officers in riot gear to take out Sean Dunn for the crime of having hurled a sandwich at a police officer. Now, when you talk about wasting resources, diverting resources from real crime prevention. And you know, what a lot of people don't realize is Dunn and his lawyer offered to turn themselves in multiple times, according to the lawyer. And the government gave no response because they didn't want the guy showing up for arraignment or anything to turn himself in. They wanted the video of 20 guys in riot gear going to arrest some yuppie who hurled the Subway sandwich. Oh, and by the way, the Trump administration apparently wants to be tough on those that attack police officers, right? This guy hurled a sandwich. Who cares if it was only a sandwich? It's an assault, Hody. Amazingly, though, this administration also pardoned Jared Davis, who actually did attack police officers, and now he works for the administration. Isn't that interesting? Apparently, if you're a Republican and attack cops, it's an act of liberty. If you're against the Trump administration and hurl a sandwich, you're a vicious felon that needs to get behind bars for 8 years. Hody, do you think they convict this guy and actually put him away for this amount of time, or do you think there'll be a judge with some sort of sanity to them?
I don't know. I don't know. I would love to suppose, but it all depends on the judge, right? Like, it all depends on where they go. My guess is they're going to do everything they can to get the most favorable judge to get this in front of their desk, right?
Like, right.
And, is it technically assault? Listen, I don't want you throwing a baseball at an innocent person who's just standing there, right? Like, so I think that they've got a good case against him. The unfortunate thing is, as you mentioned, this is the dystopian part of it.
Yeah.
There are, Epstein files, right? Literal pedophiles. We know that they're out there. The FBI themselves, said they had thousands of people. Even when they said there was no list, they said there were tens of thousands of perpetrators. They just weren't able to, we couldn't bust them because we don't want to expose the victims or anything like that or whatever, right? So they're choosing not to go after somebody who's sexually assaulting children. And they are choosing to go after this person who's throwing a Subway sandwich at a cop. They are choosing to go after the jaywalkers. They're choosing to go after somebody who goes 65 and a 55. And because it's D.C., that's some kind of special kind of civil crime. It's not normal speeding. This is super speeding, right? And you're getting busted on this. And I'm just so tired of seeing these people that either do victimless crimes or minimal crimes and watching, like you said, 20 people armed, this was an operation that will set the taxpayers back. You just think about the time and armaments involved and the coordination and everything with the FBI. And it's like, and they'll brag about it. They're like, this was a $20,000 exfiltration of getting him out of his apartment. And you got rape kits rotting away on the shelf. You're backed up. You've got people who got their cars broken into and you can't even bother to dust for them. Yeah. It's really a nightmare when it comes to like the libertarian society we want to see. It's all headed in the wrong direction, and Aaron has it exactly right here. Yeah. Don't you love a justice system where your fate is dependent on which judge you're put in front of? Yeah, that's not constitutionalism. That's not small government. That's all.
It's nonsense, is what it is.
It's bureaucracy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nonsense, is what it is. And listen, there are, like, for those that agree that this is not, and I can hear some hardcore conservatives that are like, yeah, that's an assault. I don't care if it's a deadly weapon or not. 8 years, yeah, put him behind for 8 years. Like, fair enough. This guy was actually a DOJ employee. He is an Air Force veteran. He is not what you would call your prototypical, quote-unquote, libtard that MAGATs are so happy to see suffer under any circumstance. So it's like, it's funny how the circumstances change simply because of the expression of a political opinion. Now, to your point, should the guy have some sort of punishment handed down to him? Probably. But you know what it should be? It should be a ticket. It should be like, here's a ticket, or you get 30 days suspended sentence, something to that effect. You know, like it just doesn't match up. Now, the good news is that typically speaking, when someone's arraigned on a felony charge against a police officer, their bail is usually very high, or they're not released on bail at all. In this case, the guy was released on his own recognizance, no bail. So that is a good sign that the federal judge would be like, just show up for the court date. You know, that's okay. So hopefully this will be something like where he gets either a fine or suspended sentence or something like that, or time served, whatever the case may be, because it is really a joke. But the language that's coming out of this, Hody, is exactly what you and I would fear and most libertarians would fear. This is just the pretext. It is the test run for Trump potentially overstepping his authority. He's got all these ICE agents now, and because of the way the laws work, immigration basically can send ICE into any city in any state in the United States for the most part. It doesn't have to be a port of entry state. It doesn't have to be, you know, where you have a lot of border crossings. Like, ICE has now become his personal Marines on home soil. And when he's talking about, hey, Chicago needs to be policed, you know, things are horrible in Chicago. Things are horrible in L.A. Things are horrible in New York. And again, the FBI crime statistics paint a different picture. The three cities I just mentioned, crime has been decreasing, not increasing, decreasing. So especially when you look at violent crime, like you might find a category of crime like purse snatchings or something that may have increased, or delinquency or something like that. Loitering may have been up, you know. But and the way it's presented, Hody, I have this feeling that it's not targeted to the citizens in these urban areas. It's targeted to the middle of the country that don't live anywhere near a city, for example. They're either in the suburbs or the rural areas. And their concept of New York or Washington, D.C. or Chicago is that it's, you know, something from Mad Max, you know, where it's just people killing each other in the street over, you know, over a beer or something. Do you think that Trump, he said he will, do you think he views this now as, I've got the green light because we're painting such a wonderful propaganda about D.C. We've now got the green light to go into Chicago, New York, L.A., all these places that I personally detest.
I think he's going for the green light, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think he has it yet because this has not been tremendously popular.
Right.
You look at – I mean, Sandwich Guy is a great example. Was this guy standing up for immigrants when it happened? No. What was the issue? He was blocking the street. This is something I've seen conservatives irritated at the liberals with forever.
Right.
He's like, get off the street. You're blocking traffic. You're blocking things up. I'm trying to walk here, right? Like,
right.
Get to my car. I'm trying to get – you're not letting me get to my car. Like, stop this, right? So this is actually something that conservatives have wanted to charge liberals with forever. And now it's just flipped around, right? And so the issue here is that Trump is trying to make himself out to be a good guy by doing the thing that his own base has made to be bad guy behavior. Blocking traffic and stuff, but he hopes that you see this as something bigger than what it is. You framed this whole conversation very well, because as you said, he's overblowing the violent crime that he's going after. The violent crime he's going after is sandwich guy, or it's a sex trafficking ring that has been planned by the Biden administration, and they were going to execute it this week regardless, right? Though, hey, that's good, right? Like, okay, yeah, go after that stuff. But what we're seeing is that Trump has actually been weaker on violent crime with his intervention and increased nonviolent victimless crime in order to beef these numbers up. And so he'll get up there and say, oh, yeah, we busted, this many people. You run the numbers and it's less people. You run the numbers and it's more drug offenses and gun offenses, and it's less carjacking offenses. He's right. Going after all the wrong things, but he's not going to frame it that way. He's just going to frame it as, look at us. We arrested in 8 days, 630 people, which is 30 people less than they usually arrest in a week with an extra day to your data. Like, this is just really, people need to see through this. And I think because he bungled the Epstein files so bad, I don't know that he's got that green light yet. And so it's just important. I think, thankfully, the fact checkers, even right-wing fact checkers, are kind of alert to this, what's going on with the D.C. crime. Even they have kind of been like, we can't really help you out with as far as the crime rate and the claims that you're making. There is currently one fact check that does support them, and it is a White House fact check. The rest of them didn't quite pan out their way. So he doesn't have that green light, but he'll just keep repeating a lie until hopefully you believe it. This has worked for Trump before.
Sure.
And so it's up to us culturally to make sure it doesn't happen now.
Well, that and the fact that Pam Blondie decided that she was going to tie this into the deep state. After they arrested sandwich tossing guy, Sean Dunn, and it came out that he was an employee of the DOJ, mm-hmm. The first thing she did, of course, was fire him. And look, fair enough, okay? If you work for the DOJ and you get pinched for even a sandwich assault, I could see where you lose your job, to be honest with you. Fair enough. But the follow-up to it was, see, he's part of that deep state we're trying to get rid of. And when I was reading it, I think I choked on the coffee I was drinking. It's like, you're tying that pink shirt-wearing yuppie who ran like he had an anchor tied around his waist.
Right.
He's the deep state you're trying to eliminate. He's an example of the deep state. Like what could be more? The more you listen to some of these proclamations, whether they're coming from Stephen Miller, Pam Blondie, Kash Patel, all these guys, Trump himself, you know, but we're used to it from Tom. You hear, like, Scott Bessent, no matter what the subject is, it just becomes more and more outrageously ridiculous that you have to ask yourself, you know, why isn't there a law against stupid proclamations? It's really what it comes down to. But they're trying to say this guy's part of the deep state, again, ignoring the fact that they're sitting on the Epstein files. They've admitted that these files exist. Now they're trying to pretend like they've disappeared. Do you think this is resonating at all? And I know it's tough for me and you, Hody, because we don't buy into it at all. But do you think it resonates at all with the Trump base? I think that's the key question, right? Like, does it resonate with his own base? We saw that the Epstein file mess, he overestimated how much goodwill he had. Like, Trump himself, Teflon, right? They still love Trump. Mm-hmm. But you saw the people turn against Bongino, turn against Bondi, turn against Patel. So do you think his base buys into this nonsense at all? Is it something that works for them?
Yeah, so I'll say what I said, you know, when we talked about all that too. You're never going to, like, suddenly cut a party in half, right?
Right.
It's too established. People are too indoctrinated. I don't want to make it sound like people are sheep and I value them less. They work hard to do psychological, social studies,
right,
to make it so that you comply, so that you give into this kind of idolatry, and they do a good job of it. So when you lose, you know, like with the Epstein files, maybe it was only 10% of his base that jumped ship, but 10% right. is huge. I don't. This isn't going to be worse than the Epstein files, but is maybe another 1%, 2% going to fall off here? Yes, but that's the difference in elections in this country, right? Like when we talk about 1% saying, you know what, even if I'm not a Democrat, I'm just not going to show up to the polls this next midterm. You know, I'm not going to show up next time. It all matters. Like, obviously, he's still Teflon. He's still going to be the main guy. When he leaves office, he could commit. I mean, I guess he's already doing concentration camps, so what am I going to say? He's going to do he could declare the war on the entire rest of the world, and he will be above 50% with Republicans. That's never going to happen when you see somebody fracture that badly. But we are going to potentially see him fall so precipitously with Republicans, even if you lose 20% of them, that would be like a huge fracture, and that is something that looks pretty realistic for this Trump term.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Hody, it seems like a good point to transition. Thank you for your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
And now that we're transitioning to our next topic, before we do so, let me remind everyone, help your boys out. Get some free-for-all swag in nice, true libertarian colors, black and yellow. Yes, and even perhaps a Grumblings mug. Just scan that QR code if you don't mind. That'll take you to our store, Live Free. I actually ordered a couple of these for ourselves. I got mine yesterday, Hody. Looks damn good, if I do say so myself. Nice, simple message, Live Free. Who can argue with that? And, of course, to Mr. Hody's point, if you're someone who enjoys their caffeine in the morning, what better way than to consume that out of a classic Grumblings coffee mug, 15 ounces. Nice, sleek, black color with our red logo on it. Folks, help your boys out. We don't have the Kremlin backing us up. We don't have RT sending us money like a lot of the right-wing influencers. We don't have George Soros funding us like the left-wing influencers. We're trying to make a buck or two on our own here. So help your boys out. Buy some swag. Check it out. And the last thing I'll do is I'll put this up. Go to our store. We've got all sorts of swag there beyond what I just showed you. Go to the tinyurl.com/gm-shop. It sounds more complicated than it is. You see the address there. Check it out. We'd really appreciate it if you went there and got yourself some swag. Help your boys out a little bit. And that's it for now, Hody. Lots of new swag. Hopefully we'll see some in the street. When we go to the market, perhaps, we'll see some folks wearing our swag. All right. Again, if you have any questions or comments for us, please feel free. Go to the chat on X, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook. Hit us up with your questions. We love to hear from you. Any questions or comments, please feel free to hit us up. Okay. The second question we had today, when we opened the show, Hody, I asked, is it possible for any human being to stop or to end six different wars in 6 months? Apparently, that has been the claim coming out of the Trump administration, or six conflicts in 7 months, I believe. I don't want to brag too much about him, but I believe that was the statement. This comes as of the end of last week, you had the Ukraine-Russia peace negotiations. Now, what's interesting about this is President Trump invited Putin to Alaska. We got all sorts of very nationalistic photos of Trump pretending to be tougher than Putin, flying a B-2 bomber over his head when they were on the tarmac, yada, yada, yada. All fine and good. No deals came out of that. Even more importantly, Trump made it very clear, I'm not even inviting Zelensky to the initial meeting. He gets the kiddie table the following days. It's one-on-one, me and Putin. Before we go on to his other achievements, talk to me about this. How do you feel about Trump's peace negotiations, attempts at peace, with Vladimir Putin? Because let's face it, he's not dealing with Zelensky at all. Zelensky is a fly on the wall to him. He's dealing with Putin. How do you feel his approach with Putin is going to work out?
It's hard to say on this one. I think that I'm glad that we saved so little time for this segment because we really don't know. What has happened is that they've emerged saying things were really productive with both the meeting with Zelensky and Putin. How? What did we get closer to? And then the reports are, well, Russia seems to want some of the Ukrainian land that they took, and Ukraine doesn't want to give it to them. That's where we've been the entire time. That's not new. Like, what are you talking about, right? Like, that's not – what is produced then? What was productive, right? Like, this is – oh, we're just trying to resolve that land of the Trump – of the land that they invaded and took. Yeah, Ukraine doesn't want them to have it. Putin wants to keep it. That's – and that's where we're at, right? Like, so for me, I don't know. I ultimately – the issue with Putin, and thankfully because Putin has no problem killing his political opponents and laughing about it, is we have a lot of history with Putin. He could sign a treaty tomorrow and invade 2 days. You know, he doesn't care. Like, whatever makes you weaker so that you will allow him to invade is something that he will do. He has proven it time and time again. Google how many peace treaties Putin has broken and be prepared for your eyes to blow out of your skull. This is not a guy who cares about peace agreements. Trump spent a lot of time saying, well, they were negotiating with me this time and they really respect me. Trump already had peace treaties between 4 different nations broken this year. Nobody cares about him more than anybody else when he brokers a peace treaty. It is ridiculous, especially because he brokered a peace treaty in his first term that was broken as well. The idea that they respect him too much to break these treaties, and that's the only – that's literally the only difference he can even cite between these treaties and everybody else's. We already know that's not true. So really, I almost feel like supposing at this point doesn't really matter. It's just a matter of shutting Putin down is all I really care about.
Yeah, it is a tough spot, especially when it comes to Russia and Ukraine, especially if you're a libertarian, right? Because, look, nobody wants to send money to the Ukraine or Russia or anywhere else, right? Nobody wants to put American lives at risk. We are not involved. I get it. Is Trump right to some extent about NATO? Yes, he is. But at the end of the day, you can't whitewash what Russia, that they are the aggressors here. They invaded the Ukraine. And I mean, you have apologists left and right. But the truth of the matter is they initiated the violence. Now, if you're Ukraine, and Trump is like, well, they'll just have to give up the Donbass. They'll have to give up, whatever, 25% of their sovereignty, 40% of their sovereignty, whatever the final percentage is. Well, in that case, what you're saying is might makes right. There is no objective justice. There is no objective right thing. It's just, hey, Russia's bigger than you. Deal with it. Do what you can. Give them what you can. Now, and we talked about this on Liberty Lens with Mike Termott this week. Check that out at grumblingsmedia.com, by the way. I don't doubt, the one thing I don't doubt Trump about, because I've heard him say it, no. I think he really does not like war. I think he hates the idea of people dying in a war. I grant him that. When he says that, I think he's sincere. I just think he has no idea how to go about it. And to think that using stupid tariffs is his key to solving all the world's problems, including like, hey, well, you know, if what was it, Cambodia and Thailand? If you guys don't cut it out, we're going to tariff the hell out of both of you. All right. We'll stop for now. What to your point, what has been accomplished? What's a permanent solution? It seems as if Trump's main goal is, let me get a couple of leaders to stand next to me and say, yeah, we talked about peace and we'll stop shooting at each other for 2 weeks. Trump gets to say that he deserves the Nobel Prize. And then to your point, none of these quote unquote agreements ever stand. As a matter of fact, in the India-Pakistan dispute, which of course Trump was crowing all about that, right? I brokered a peace deal between two nuclear powers and blah, 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 blah. It got to the point where Modi, the Prime Minister of India, said Trump had nothing to do with this, absolutely zero to do with this. I wish he'd stop saying he brokered this. And as a matter of fact, ran into the arms of Putin. Modi is there saying, oh, my friend, good friend Putin, he understands what's going on in India, blah, blah, blah. And here's the question I pose to Tremont. I'll pose it to you. Is Trump's nonsense, this crowing, this thinking that he's the biggest peace negotiator in the world, in fact, is he in essence strengthening the BRICS alliance? Is he in fact setting us up for another Cold War, if not worse than a Cold War, Hody? Think about it. India, China, and Russia are getting stronger and stronger ties because of his stupid tariffs, if nothing else. Economically, he's driving them into the arms of the BRICS countries. And recently, this past week, we heard he's considering putting boots on the ground in Venezuela because apparently they decided to arrest his friend in Venezuela. So he's putting boots on the ground there.
Yeah, they've already sent 4,000 troops over to Venezuela, and now they're – I mean, at the moment, I guess they're still on ships, so they're not on the ground, but they're ready, you know, to invade. This is something that's certainly an escalation. Yeah, if you want to strengthen defensive pacts, threaten them, right? That's and then more countries call up to be like, hey, the United States might invade me next. Can I get in on that alliance? Yeah, that's a good way to do it, right? This is the exact complaint that Putin has about NATO, and – he caused that. We are doing the same thing for BRICS. So I think your guess here is correct. I do want to say, as far as like Trump being a peacemaker, people are like, if you even try to fact check that, people have no idea what six conflicts he's talking about. So you get like, they're taking a guess. They're like, I don't know what six conflicts is he even talking about.
I've got four this year. I think we've got Russia, Ukraine, India, Pakistan, ceasefire. And by the way, Russia, Ukraine, nothing's been accomplished, to your point. This is just them talking, right? He's counting that as peace. India, Pakistan, ceasefire, which we've already seen Modi publicly say he had nothing to do with that. We just finally realized we're pointing nuclear weapons at each other, and you could walk from one country to the other, so it's not really smart to do that. The Cambodia-Thailand ceasefire in July. By the way, the extent of that, quote-unquote, conflict, 36 people killed. Okay, I'm not saying look, one life is one life too many, but let's not overblow it as being full out war. And that's about it. Oh, and Israel, Iran, Rwanda, Republic of Congo, Serbia, Kosovo, Egypt, Ethiopia, and like to your point, he claims victory for these things because he tends to get a couple of weeks of quiet and then these things fall apart because there's no long-term solutions. Core disputes are not being settled, Hody. And there's a great comment here. Let me just put it up. Mike Tackett, who I believe is a fan of our Blindside Blitz show, if I remember correctly. Mike, thank you for wading into libertarian politics, Mike. Glad you stumbled across us, but he says, this whole conflict, pretending that things are being fixed, is the equivalent of a child, quote, cleaning their room, but just stuffing everything in their closet. Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Odie, what do you think of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got your finger on the pulse on this one, Big John. It's one of those where it's like there was a conflict on the India-Pakistan border, and it looks like the Trump administration did talk to Pakistan, did not talk to India. But that skirmish happened and ended in April. And then, you know, in May, Indian jets come by and retaliate. And then it looks over. These are, by the way, two countries with nuclear capabilities. If you think it was going to escalate beyond that, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this wasn't going to happen. So then they sit, have like a full month of peace. And then Trump's guy comes by, talks to one of the two parties, and is like, we did it. There's peace now. And it's like, well, it was kind of over. I don't know what to tell you. Like, this really wasn't anything.
Right.
The DRC versus Rwanda, his peace deal got rejected. M23 is still actively killing people while we speak. That's that deal he negotiated. And of course, he's way too respected for anybody to break a negotiation with him. It's already done. The one between Iran and Israel, within 48 hours of that negotiated ceasefire, both countries had attacked each other, right? Like it was, and so now they're back in attacking. Like you said, Cambodia, Thailand is like, it was like, oh, was there some violence? Can I send a guy? And then be like, hey guys, let's stop. and then count it as peace. And then if they don't stop, and it hasn't stopped, the conflict is still ongoing there. Right? They're fighting over these Hindu territories. There's no negotiation for those Hindu-controlled temples and on the border there. There's no negotiation for that. That's not resolved. Armenia, Azerbaijan, same thing. Right? Like, Azerbaijan took, like, this whole thing, 100,000 ethnic Armenians still without a home. But Trump was like, oh, did they stop shooting each other? Can I send a guy over there that was like, let's stop shooting? And then they have, like, 1 month where these people are just displaced for their homes, but I can call it peace? Sure, chalk it up, count me in. Like, all these peace treaties are such a joke. And it's just one of those that is like, you could, if Obama did this, you would be outraged. And so you would, I should absolutely be outraged for Trump doing it now. In many of these cases, by the way, they are using not only American weapons, but American weapons that Trump gave them. So this is like, I guess if you wanted to be like the most peacemaking president ever, why doesn't he just start like 13 wars and then give up on all of them the next day? And then he can say, oh, I did 13 wars in a single day. I'm such a peaceful president. It's ridiculous. It's all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, it is smoke and mirrors. And it's funny, though, because the one thing I noted is he seems to love unilateral peace talks. Like he's really not talking – like when Carter tried to broker a peace deal back in, what was it, 79, he had Sadat. He had Begin. And he had them both, you know, at Cape David. He's trying to hash something out, whether he was ultimately successful or not, you know. But my point is, it's like, he's like, I'll talk to Putin, but I'm not even going to invite Zelensky. How can you have peace negotiations when you're not talking to the two involved parties, right? Like you said, with India, Pakistan, he basically focused on Pakistan, not on India, right? So I don't know if he's picking sides, if he just feels one side is more open to taking pictures with him. And it really is like, how about this, though? We only got a minute or two, but I want you to talk to me about this. Two things. The open mic when he was talking to Macron, and then he said, the hot mic, rather, where he said, he said to Macron, I'll get the deal done with Putin. He'll do me a favor. He'll do it for me. Little hinky to hear the president talk like that, I think. And then the second thing is when someone said, why are you doing this? He goes, I want to be the greatest beast president because I want to, it's my, what do you say? I want to buy my ticket into heaven or something to that effect. Meaning that he was doing this. And it's the first time I've heard him talk in that way. Because despite his followers' inclinations, he is not a religious man. He's never talked about that, anything spiritual in his life. We all remember him like, well, I won't get into it, but yeah, that's not Trump, right? So what do you talk very quickly? Tell me about that. Did you get the sense that he's feeling like I've done a lot of hinky shit in my life and I got to get my act together because I am kind of getting to the end of the race right now?
I don't know.
It's totally speculative. I get it, but.
Yeah, I think to me, so the hot mic pickup was he said, I think he wants to make a deal for me, you understand, as crazy as it sounds. And he's talking about Putin, right? So he's telling Macron that Putin wants to make a deal with him, as crazy as it sounds. To me, this is just more Trump bluster. Like, it's just more, oh, Putin wants to make a deal for – no, Putin doesn't want to make a deal with you. He wants the stupid land. Like, he doesn't want a ceasefire. He wants – Putin went on Tucker Carlson and told the world – that he wants an ethnostate for Russia, a single Russian ethnostate. He thinks Ukrainians are Russians and that they should have to be under his ethnostate. He was very blatant about it.
Yeah.
There was no mincing words. And it's funny because conservatives actually praised this interview, you might recall.
Right.
And I'm like, did you fall asleep during the first couple hours? Because the whole reason he did that long history lesson was to tell you that this is his goal, is to have this ethnostate.
He's trying to rebuild the Russian Empire. Very simple.
Right. He's blatant about it. Right. When Putin was asked, what about your like opponent who got poisoned? People forget this. This is from Trump's first term. And they asked him in the White House. They were like, well, what about your opponent you poisoned? And he was like, you Americans, your Martin Luther King Jr.'s, your John F. Kennedy's always end up dead and no one asks questions. So I don't see why I should have to answer any questions either. I do the same thing that you people do. And it was just like, oh my gosh. So you are admitting you do it. You're just saying, yeah, everybody kills their opponents.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's what we do. And I was just like, dude, this is a wild dude who has no problem just kind of casually admitting that this is what he does.
He's also a stone cold killer.
Absolutely. Like, KGB certified, actual KGB agent, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, anyone who looks at him and the word killer doesn't pop into your mind, there's something wrong with you. And that guy is a killer. You know, that's all there is to it. He's a gangster. He's a killer. That's all there is to it. But you're right.
If you're playing a video game and some bald shirtless dude comes up to you on horseback, you know you're in some trouble, right? Like, that's not like, oh, that's my new friend ready to give me a side quest. You're like, no, that's trouble.
Right. You're absolutely right. Well, I guess the verdict here was no. Trump is really not the peacemaking president that he thinks he is. He thinks he's a peacemaker, but he's not.
Sure. And why does he want to push for this? Oh, I deserve the Nobel Prize? Because he wants to create that image that the establishment is out to get him. He's created all this peace, but the establishment is out to get him. In a way, he's kind of right in the sense that they did reward Barack Obama because the establishment did like him. And the establishment doesn't like Trump, right? Like, so in a way, he's a little bit correct. But even so, Obama didn't earn it. Trump definitely hasn't earned it. Well,
right.
You know, so they're about the equivalence here. We messed up on one. That doesn't mean we also have to mess up on the other one, right? Like, being president does not mean a peace prize unless you actually create peace. The only difference was Obama was at least articulate about it, and that's it.
Yeah, that was a joke too. Let's be honest. Like, all the Nobel Prizes, except perhaps for the hard sciences, meaning like unless it's for chemistry, biology, or physics. Every other Nobel Prize, peace, literature, all that, is all political, obviously, right? It's who they feel good about. And it was Obama's, like, hey, maybe America isn't super racist anymore. That's the only reason he won, right? But anyway. All right, folks, this has been Free for All. Hody, thank you once again for joining me and spending an hour and having a great conversation. I always enjoy our talks. Hopefully you folks out there have enjoyed our talks as well. Thanks to our folks in the chat. We appreciate you spending some time with us and sending us your questions and comments. Really appreciate that. Catch this replay as well as all our past episodes along with our other shows like Liberty Lens with Mike Termott. We also have a couple of sports casts, the Blindside Blitz if you like football. We have Buzzer Beaters if you like basketball. We also have Pop Culture, Red, White, and Rude Show with William Del Pilar, Points on the Board where sports and politics collide. And if you happen to be one of those MAGA Republicans, we even got a show for you. Check out Fired Up live every Friday night right here on Grumblings Media. Go to grumblingsmedia.com. And until next week, for my friend and co-host, Mr. Hody Johns, this is Big John. Peace, everyone.